Do you get excited when you start daydreaming about the times you're planning for future outings in the outdoors? Perhaps you've just been considering the idea of using the interest in God's creation that others have to connect them with their Maker. Well, why not join us, won't you, as we visit with pro and amateur sportsmen alike who help others come to know their Creator on the trail to adventure. Here's Jerry Calouette, the host of God's Great Outdoors.
All right, this is Jerry Calouette, God's Great Outdoors. We're here at Cedarville University, actually at Dr. John Whitmore's office, a geologist and paleontologist here at Cedarville, and he just happens to have somebody visiting with him as I came in here to do an interview with John, and that's Dr. Steve Austin, and we're going to be talking about some things that have happened in the past that were just one of the most unbelievable opportunities for geologists to study, and that was the explosion of Mount St. Helens and the fact that we can learn from what took place there. It was very well documented, and just want to welcome Dr. Steve Austin. Thanks for being here on God's Great Outdoors.
Thank you, Jerry. It's good to be talking to you.
Want to know a little bit more about this geological event that took place there in Washington State, Mount St. Helens, just the fact that this volcano went a little bit differently than most of them do. Instead of blowing up, it wound up behaving in a way that allowed you to be able to see things that had an impact on your thinking, old Earth versus new creation and new Earth. Maybe you can give us a little bit of details on that.
I'm a geologist, and I'm a graduate of University of Washington in Seattle, Washington. My experience with Mount St. Helens before, during, and after was very vivid, and so it was an important part of my life. The eruption in 1980 challenged the way I think about the Earth, and so it became one of the greatest geologic events of the 20th century, probably the geologic event of the 20th century, and when we're looking back on the 20th century now, I think we think about that most amazing thing, the explosion of Mount St. Helens in Washington State.
Now, Steve, at the time, were you a student at the University of Washington? The details as far as that was a few years ago. That was back in the 1980s, and you don't look like you're that old. So consequently, it might have been something that you got to do as a grad student, something of that nature.
Yeah, I was a graduate student at Penn State University doing work on coal geology. Then I took a professorship at a college, and in 1980, when Mount St. Helens exploded, I was in Southern California. But Mount St. Helens was the a learning experience of the 20th century.
Why don't we talk a little bit about, as the whole thing was developing, we know that the ground was starting to swell, the planes would fly over, they were putting different types of sensors all around the volcano to try and decide if something was going to happen. I think there was even a period of time they said, hey, we think it's going to be just fine, and then the next thing you know, maybe you can walk us through the details of what took place there.
In March of 1980, the first earthquakes came directly under the mountain. And so geologists knew that Mount St. Helens was waking up. And then these earthquakes became very frequent, like several per day. And then it vented steam end of March 1980. Steam came out of the summit. And so it was obvious that magma had moved around in the mountain, and then and hot rock was down there. And then it basically sat dormant. A little bit of earthquake activity for 3 months, and the mountain swelled, and this giant bulge developed on the north slope of the volcano. And then people got very impatient because everybody was expecting a magmatic explosion, you know, where magma got to the surface and exploded. And it sat there for about 3 months, and it had 450 feet of swelling. Last 3 days, it was swelling as much as 50 feet a day. The explosion occurred on May 18th, 1980, at 8:32 in the morning. Not a cloud in the sky. Everybody asking what is happening at the mountain, and seeing nothing. Then it exploded. It was equivalent to about 440 million tons of TNT blast energy during that 9-hour eruption on May 18, 1980.
Well, certainly that early in the morning, folks would have been cooking breakfast. And, of course, the idea of the breakfast always reminds me of what's going on up there at Rushing Wind as we're getting ready to go out and fishing. And Arnie and Dee are preparing the breakfast for us there. And the smells are so good. And that's reminding me that Cindy, my wife, is standing by to share today's recipe. Folks, do send in your recipes, how you prepare the wild fish, game, or plants that you're harvesting. And let us know who it is you're spending the time in the outdoors with, and what kind of activity it is you'd like to do, and we'll send you a copy of Steve Chapman's book, Outdoor Insights, and their autograph for that recipe. We'll be right back after Cindy shares this.
Now, friends, if you are looking for some of the best wild game and fish recipes to savor the experience of your family's time of field or stream, we've got the cookbook for you. Steve Chapman, author of A Look at Life from a Deer Stand, and his wife Annie have teamed up to write The Hunter's Cookbook. This book is packed with over 200 recipes to turn wild meats and fish into mouth-watering meals. Also scattered amongst the pages are Steve's family's hunting and fishing stories to read while cooking, and Steve Chapman's hand-sketched drawings to complement the stories and recipes too. The Hunter's Cookbook by Steve and Annie Chapman is on our website store at ggoutdoors.org, or call us here at 937-698-3656 to order over the phone. And would you please like us on Facebook at God's Great Outdoors Radio? Remember Genesis 9:3. Everything that lives and moves will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything.
Well, we're back. Jerry Calhoun, God's Great Outdoors, again here in Cedarville, Ohio, at Cedarville University, Dr. John Whitmore's office, and we're with Dr. Steve Austin, and talking about Mount St. Helens and the fact that the blast came outward and there was this huge amount of steam. And we know that there were people that lost their lives. I mean, it actually was cooking cars, melting tires, and things like that. Maybe we could talk a little bit about, I think it knocked all the bark off the trees, knocked trees down. It was a huge event.
Yes, 150 square miles of forest was leveled in 6 minutes by the horizontal blast. The most unusual part of Mount St. Helens' explosion was the horizontal directed blast. On May 18, 1980, the volcano exploded at 8:32 in the morning in a nozzle directed northward over the landscape. It leveled 150 square miles of forest in 6 to 10 minutes, and it killed 57 people that were in the blast zone. Most of them were in areas they advised not to be. It became the geologic event of the 20th century.
Well, I also know we have friends, and Greg has talked about the fact that he was pastoring a church at the time there, and the amount of ash that fell all around them there in the Yakima, Washington area and other areas, just unbelievable. There was a huge amount of ash that went out from the blast. Believe, if I'm remembering correctly, of course, all the flights had to be canceled. But at the same time, the skies were blackened. It went for quite a distance, even eventually going across the continent, the particles. Maybe we could talk a little bit about the effects of something like that when it takes place.
Well, the blast cloud was visible from outer space, a big donut-shaped cloud around Mount St. Helens. That was the expansion wave, and then the volcanic ash particles were in the atmosphere. And they went almost all the way around the world. Okay, they circled the planet and created this reddened sunsets and things. They're east of the volcano, north and east of the volcano. For many hours, it was dark. Streetlights automatically came on at noon in Yakima, Washington. So the volcanic ash was extreme.
You know, I know that there were a number of other things that took place, and you as a geology student, you had thoughts about whether it was an old Earth, new Earth, and maybe we can talk about the fact that things that they thought happened over hundreds, thousands of years were happening in minutes, and it just was, I guess, a perfect laboratory to be able to observe.
Yes, Jerry, the eruption of Mount St. Helens was a laboratory for the study of catastrophic process. Lots of things happened rapidly, and we can document how fast they occurred because the volcano was had sensors on it, and we had photography, and we had people seeing the thing from all different angles. So it was one of the best studied volcanic explosions of history, probably the best studied volcanic explosion of history. And what it produced is almost a Ripley's, believe it or not, of geologic things and a process. And Mount St. Helens made strata rapidly, layers. Layering north of the volcano was especially extraordinary when geologists started looking into it. And then we saw erosion features form at Mount St. Helens. Large mud flows especially eroded solid rock, made canyons, and we see a little Grand Canyon, 1/40th scale model north of the volcano.
Now, I was thinking that happened in 3 days. You said that happened in just one day, a 1/40th scale of the Grand Canyon in one day. That's a pretty big wow.
Yeah, a big mud flow came through on March 19th, 1982, and overtopped a debris avalanche dam of material, boulders and volcanic ash. And the mud flow ponded behind this barrier, and then it breached the barrier. Essentially, in a day, this major terrain was formed. About 150 feet of erosion occurred when the mud came through. Yeah, a canyon, 1/40th scale of Grand Canyon, was formed there at the breached terrain at Mount St. Helens.
Well, Steve, I know there's another thing that took place in Spirit Lake that was quite amazing, and we're going to talk about that. We do have to take another break, and we'll find out what happened then. We'll be right back after this.
This radio program is possible because of financial help from our listeners, and for this help, we are truly blessed. God's Great Outdoors thanks the Lord for all of you who have helped us reach 23 years on the air.
Additional underwriting support is by Matthews Archery and their all-new Engaged Grip Vertex Bow, plus Mission Archery with a revolutionary technology and design that provides a maximum crossbow experience. And by Antler King, the leader in wildlife nutrition products, bigger bucks, healthier deer. Also, Three Rivers Archery, supplying what one needs to make their own bows and arrows, and Hunter Safety System, saving lives is what we do. Plus, Bucks Unlimited, a real estate company, offering both land purchase and management services in several Midwestern states.
Enjoy your love of scuba diving along with lending a helping hand to those in need. The Worldwide Christian Scuba Divers Organization is a group of scuba divers focused on exploring the beauty of God's creation and reaching out to the community where we dive. Discover how you can use your God-given talents to help in rebuilding lives. Visit our website at scubamissions.com or call 610-996-9968. Join the Worldwide Christian Scuba Divers Organization, diving into an adventure with two missions on every trip.
What if there was a recreational ministry that targeted all students, regardless of age or physical ability? Well, there is. Center Shot Ministries is an archery program that shares the love of Christ while teaching the fundamentals of target archery. This is a proven and successful archery instruction that can even be done inside your church. Center Shot engages the students for Christ and develops their skills in archery. Check out their website at centershotministries.org or call 920-634-5978.
We're back, Jerry Calouette, God's Great Outdoors, again here in Cedarville University in Dr. John Whitmore's office and the labs just outside. You might be able to hear the students as they're cutting rocks and doing that kind of thing. Spirit Lake had all of these trees in them. I forget how many square board feet it was. You could have built umpteen thousands and thousands of homes. The bark's all blown off. And you decided to, after watching a stick on the side of the shore, go scuba diving in the middle of all these gigantic trees, because these are big trees, and I believe there was still volcanic activity taking place. It was that was kind of a dangerous thing. Let's talk about that.
Well, there were a million logs floating in Spirit Lake after the eruption on May 18, 1980. 1 million logs floated in a giant lake. The whole lake was modified enormously by the explosion. Anyway, a giant water wave created by the landslide deposit up to 860 feet high. This giant water wave washed back into the lake, and it deposited on the surface, floating on the lake, a million logs. When I heard about that and was told that, I had to go out there. Then I saw it, and I knew I had to go diving in amongst the logs. I did. I trained to be a scientific diver and do that difficult diving experience. But we found on the bottom of the lake that logs were falling out vertically and being implanted in the bottom of the lake, have in standing position, having the appearance of being a forest which grew at that level. Of course, the forest couldn't have grown there because it was underwater, and that's the bottom of the lake.
Now, if I remember correctly, there's a situation like that in Yellowstone where all these trees are supposedly growing up out of the ground, but could have been a similar scenario years before, and then the water was removed, and so now you got the trees standing there looking like they grew there.
Yes, at Yellowstone National Park, there's supposed to be 27 successive layers with upright logs embedded in them, and it was suggested on a sign that these represented individual forests that grew there over millions of years. And we learned at Mount St. Helens that logs could be replanted in standing position, looking like they grew on the surface, but didn't. And it completely revolutionized geologists' ways of thinking about how logs get buried in the earth. We saw rapidly deposited logs at Mount St. Helens, and it helps us interpret Yellowstone National Park. Now, at Yellowstone National Park, there was a sign that described the Specimen Ridge Fossil Forest. It was published in Scientific American magazine that these were 27 different forests that flourished 50 million years ago. And we've learned since then that the logs can be deposited rapidly, and the petrified layers do not represent millions of years. They occurred rapidly at Mount St. Helens.
Again, this is having to do with a catastrophic occurrence rapidly being covered up in some way. If it wasn't, probably insects would have wound up eating the trees, and then it gets to a point where it's so soft that the bears come along and they tear the tree up trying to get the bugs that are in it. Steve, we've got some people listening right now as we wrap this up that are still dealing with, it had to be at least $2 billion because they told me that in school. Again, in the past, you used to think that way.
I really love looking at the earth, and I would challenge everybody to look at the earth and think imaginatively about how it formed. We see around us almost a propaganda program to talk about how we think about the earth, and it's squelching some really good ideas about the earth. And I think a large amount of the earth formed rapidly, like Grand Canyon was eroded by a big catastrophic drainage of a lake, not eroded by Colorado River over millions of years. And I think petrified logs were petrified and embedded in the earth by catastrophic mud flows and things like we see at Mount St. Helens, not by successive forests over 50 million years, something like that. And I, as a geologist, have looked at the earth now for 40 years, thinking about geologic process. I find myself coming away thinking about a global flood and about God being the creator. And I think the Bible gives me a good framework for thinking about how the earth formed. And so biblical thinking is very important to me as I've come away from that evolutionary idea that I used to believe and coming to some new ways of thinking about how the earth formed.
Amen. You have to go back to Genesis, as they say down there at the Creation Museum, Ken Ham, and we really need to be believing the Bible and the fact that we have a God who spoke everything into existence, how awesome he must be, the power that he has, but the reality of it is, too, that he loves us so much that he sent his son Jesus to die on the cross for us so we can spend eternity with him. Steve, appreciate you sharing with us and letting us have an idea, actually the challenge to look at what's all around us and be able to go past what we might have been told that goes contrary to the Word of God, and go back to the Bible and make sure that that's the foundation of everything that we're doing and looking at. Just use that kind of as a way of sifting what we hear and putting the Word of God first in our lives, in our hearts, and in everything that we do. Appreciate you sharing with all the listeners here in God's Great Outdoors. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Jerry. It's been a great pleasure talking to you today.
Well, honestly, friends, I can't tell you what a pleasant surprise it was for me as I dropped in to visit with Dr. John Whitmore to do an interview with him. But walking into his office and finding out that Dr. Steve Austin was there and having the chance to do an interview with him. You see, one of the DVDs that I have on my shelf is Dr. Steve Austin's Mount St. Helens, which is subtitled Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. His research time at Mount St. Helens, I knew that he had gone from an old earth to a new earth scientist who realized that God's word was true, that it didn't take billions of years, but as scriptures tell us, the earth's only a little over 6,000 years old. And friends, now while we're on the topic of the Creator God, I just want to know if you have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And with that relationship, you have the guarantee, a peace that passes all understanding, knowing that if you died this minute, you'd have the certainty that you would be welcomed into his kingdom and not cast into hell with the demons. Hell was created for Satan and those angels that followed him. Men only go there because they refuse the free gift of the blood that was shed on the cross that covers those sins and allows us to be into the presence of God. If you'd like to talk to someone right now because you do not have that certainty about beginning a first-time relationship with Jesus Christ, please call 1-888-NEED-HIM. You can make that call 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Again, that's 1-888-NEED-HIM. Please, don't wait. Why not make that call right now? I promise that you'll be so glad that you did.
Here's a one that got away fishing story from God's Great Outdoors. An Orvis-endorsed fly fishing instructor and guide, Dick Rebar, has also loved to canoe all his life. That love was kindled by his father, who taught Dick the proper way to handle a canoe. Top on his dad's list was safety. Only once did Dick shy away from honoring his father's lessons in canoeing safety, and it almost cost him and his wife their lives. Preparing to take his wife with him on her first ever canoe trip, Dick decided to have his young bride accompany him to a local beaver pond. It was the evening before they would be leaving with the others in the trail club to which Dick was a member of. The April air was cool, the water temperature was just in the 40s. Trying to be nice, he placed a small stump in the canoe for his wife to sit on. That was his first mistake, and his father, being the man of sense and safety he was, had taught him to always kneel on a canoe's floor to keep the center of gravity as low as possible. Dick says, "If that wasn't dumb enough, I, for some reason, had hip boots on. Something my pop always preached against while in a canoe." Well, the two paddled out, and Dick began instructing on the way to paddle the watercraft. When his novice mate began paddling on the same side as Dick, the canoe started to lean, and over it went, spilling them under the pond's surface. The water was so cold, it took their breath away. Thus, Dick was unable to tell his wife what to do, and his hip boots were now full of water, pulling him down. Thank God Dick had not hooked the boots to his belt, so he worked to pull first one and then the other one off. With the weight of the boots gone, he helped his wife to the shore and safety. Now, Dick Rebar may have been acting unsafely when it comes to canoeing, but Dick is safe in looking toward the life he'll live in the hereafter. If you also want to have the peace of a safe journey into the next life, a life at peace with Jesus Christ, call, write, or email us here at God's Great Outdoors, and we'll send you the free booklet by Ron Lindner called The End of the Line.
Did you enjoy that story? Do you know that you can get that story in the book Hunting Blunders and the One That Got Away? You can get copies to give to those that God has placed on your heart that you know need to have a personal relationship with the Creator in the creation they love to enjoy. You can order copies through our web store at ggoutdoors.org, or you can call us toll-free at 1-877-TALK-GGO. Why don't you contact us and get a copy today?
We'd love to hear how God has spoken to you. Email us at ggoutdoors@aol.com. I'm John Skillman, inviting you to always consider how to make wise use of your time in God's great outdoors.